It looks like some of the recent run-up in jobless claims was weather-related from the storms that we had throughout the South and in Alabama in particular. And now that we're moving past that, we're seeing that claims are coming back down a little bit.
Welcome to my secret lair on Skullcrusher Mountain. I hope that you've enjoyed your stay so far. I see you met my assistant Scarface.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Alex Bloomberg. Today is Friday, May 20th, and that was Mark Vittner, senior economist at Wells Fargo Securities. You heard at the top talking about jobless claims. Today, I have two very special co-hosts with me, Jacob Ganz and Franny Kelly of NPR Music. Hey, guys.
Hi, Alex. Hey.
So you guys both work at NPR Music, which is in the same office, a couple of cubicles down from me.
Part of it, yeah. We're the New York branch.
And NPR Music is the amazing NPR Music site where you have album previews, you have the Tiny Desk concerts, which you can see online, you have music news. And you are co-hosting Planet Money with me today because we are wading into territory that you guys deal with a lot. The debate over the question, is the internet good or bad for musicians?
The internet's basically the big question of the music industry right now, and it will be for the foreseeable future.
So we're going to get into that question today on the podcast, and we're going to meet a man who comes down squarely on one side of this debate. And along the way, we're going to find out some hard, cold internet music business-related numbers. But first, as always, our Planet Money Indicator with Jacob Goldstein. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, guys. Today's Planet Money Indicator, 21%. That is the unemployment rate in Spain. It's obviously a crazy high number for an unemployment rate. It's the highest unemployment rate in the Eurozone. And it has been that high for a while. But I picked it as today's indicator because actually there's a new reason to worry right now about Spain. And you know I love a reason to worry.
I do know that about you. So I feel like the line on Spain lately has been, yeah, it's in bad shape, but it's getting its act together. It's cutting its spending, cutting its deficits. It's separating itself from Greece and Ireland and Portugal, which are sort of seen as the real bad cases in Europe.
And that is true. It is definitely the case that Spain is in better shape than Greece and Ireland and Portugal. But let me give you my new reason to worry. And it comes from these regional elections that Spain is having all around the country this weekend. There's a good chance that in these elections, the ruling party is going to be voted out of office. And then what we're likely to see is new governments coming in and finding out that these regions have essentially been lying about their deficits. That's basically what happened last year in the region of Catalonia. There, a new government came in and found out that the region's deficit was way, way higher than everybody thought.
And of course, these new governments are being voted in because the unemployment rate is so high.
Right. Which is also contributing to the economic difficulty. I mean, it's still pretty ugly.
And this, of course, is also what happened in Greece, right? That Greece, they had these new elections, and that's where the new government came in and found out, oh, wait, the old government had been totally fudging the books, and our situation is much more desperate than we thought it was, and that's when the whole Greece crisis really reignited.
And in Greece, it happened at a national level. Greece is definitely still worse off than Spain. Greece is even today sort of falling apart some more. It got downgraded again. But, you know, even though Spain is not in as bad of shape as Greece, Spain, as we've been saying for a while now, it's really important. You know, Greece basically can go down. Greece can default on its debt. And there's a pretty good chance the world will be all right. But if Spain goes down, worry.
All right. Mission accomplished, Jacob. You've shared your reasons to worry.
Thank you.
All right. Now on to our other Jacob, Jacob Ganz and Franny Kelly. Before we meet the subject of today's podcast, what I'd like you to do is set up the debate. And there's a significant contingent of folks who say the internet is bad, not just for the recording industry, but for musicians themselves. The people who actually make music, the internet is going to be a net bad thing for people who make and consume music. And we just like lay out that side of the argument.
All right. So the story that I guess the record labels want us all to believe is that we're all in trouble because it's impossible to sell music for a fair price these days because it's so easy to steal it, right? And the idea is that Napster made this all possible. Now we're all used to it. There's no turning back.
And the argument is...
And the argument from the industry's point of view is that this makes it incredibly hard to sell records when anybody who has a broadband connection can basically just go on the internet and get them for free.
The idea being that we have devalued music.
I see. And what do you guys think about that argument?
I think it's probably fairly accurate. I mean, I'm not sure that the price pre-Napster was entirely fair, and the way that the money broke down certainly didn't always benefit the artists. Mm-hmm. but we're all used to getting it for free or for 99 cents a song or maybe, you know, 49. And I think that that ultimately does hurt the artist.
All right. So the rest of this podcast is a counter argument to that sentiment. The man I'm going to introduce you to is basically a one man refutation of that argument. And let's meet him now. Most people listening probably have not heard of this man. His songs never get played on the radio. He doesn't have a contract with any music label. And yet, he makes a lot of money doing music. A lot of money.
This is a spreadsheet of my income over the last 4 years. So 2007 through 2010.
And I'm looking at the total net. Are you prepared to reveal those figures?
You know, it's I don't know. It's always it's embarrassing to talk about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Franny, Jacob, meet Jonathan Colton. He is a singer-songwriter in Brooklyn. And I, unlike him, am not embarrassed to say what he made in 2010. He actually authorized me to tell everybody. He brought in almost $500,000. And since his overhead costs are very low, most of that money goes straight to him.
Which is crazy. It's just insane.
Did you ever imagine yourself making this much money off of your music?
Of course not. This is absurd. It's an absurd situation. Look at me. This is this ridiculous office here in the parlor of this Brooklyn brownstone. This is the business that I'm doing here? It doesn't seem right.
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in.
So Jonathan Colton's music is funny, melodic, and pretty nerdy. This is one of his hits. We'll get to what exactly a hit means in Colton's case a bit later. But it's a song called Regarding Your Brains, which imagines a pleading email written by an ex-office mate who is now a zombie.
But here's an FYI. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
Now, they're not all just purely jokey. They can get serious, although even the serious ones are sort of funny. Like a song about suburban alienation and dysfunctional marriage called Shop Back.
Maybe if you forget to hide the keys, I'll take a ride to Applebee's. I'll come home drunk on daiquiris and throw up on the neighbor's lawn. I'll be downstairs with the shop back. You can call, but I probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop back on.
Okay, so that's Jonathan Colton's music. And the question is, how does he take these songs and another 95 like them and turn it into $500,000 in revenue? And the answer is the thing, Franny, you're saying is taking money out of the hands of musicians, the internet.
All right, so we're going to jonathancolton.com. And here is the music page, and this is basically a reverse chronological list of the songs that I have released. Next to each one, there's a button that lets you stream it and listen to it, and there's a button to buy it for a dollar.
So advantage one to this situation for Jonathan Colton, when people click that button on his website, the money goes directly to him, unlike in the old system where the label took a lot of the money, right?
There's no costs here to divvy up. There's no infrastructure that requires feeding a flow of cash to keep it going. I mean, it's basically just him, right? He can do the whole thing himself.
It's him. And like in the old days, like for every CD that was sold, you got very little of that money as the artist. Sometimes you didn't get any money.
Right. I mean, there's distribution costs. There's promotional costs. You have to pay people, you know, to clean the offices in the building that the label is housed in. I mean, like all sorts of costs go into keeping artists, you know, on labels and continuing to put out records. And when you're just doing it on the internet, there's no physical costs at all.
Right.
You have to pay to have your own computer and an internet connection.
Server space.
And server space. But that's
about
it. You
got to pay a cut right to PayPal.
Yeah.
Right. But a cut to PayPal is a lot different than a cut to Elektra Records or whatever, right?
Like, it's not, yeah.
it's a lot smaller cut. So here's this random guy. He puts up his website. It's a tiny little dot in the middle of the internet. But not only do people go there, they pay for something that, as you guys pointed out, they could get very easily for free.
If you really want to, you can steal it, yeah.
And yet, people pay a dollar for it.
Yeah, they do. And I think that certainly there are some people who buy it because they don't know they can get it for free. And if I had a button up here that said download all this stuff for free, a lot more people would do that, I think. But, you know, I still think that a lot of the sales that come through are from people who are choosing to buy it. And it's because, you know, I think in my case, more than some other artists for sure, it's you know that the money is going to me. And I think people feel like they're a part of something.
All right. So that last part that he said, that being a part of something, that to me is the key of what's interesting about Jonathan Coulton. That's why people are willing to pay for his songs, because they feel like they have this relationship with him. And part of Jonathan Coulton's business model is maintaining that relationship. He has this blog that he updates regularly. He's constantly interacting with his fans on Facebook or tweeting things to his 60,000 Twitter followers. There are forums on his website where his fans can trade gossip about him or discuss their favorite songs or set up ride boards to his concerts, that sort of thing. All right, so what do you think? Have I convinced you?
No. Sorry. I mean, the fact is that he just...
It sounds like the internet was great for Jonathan Coulton. I mean, the problem with this comes in whether or not this is an example that anybody else can use to get to make any money on the internet. And I think that to get to that point, we have to know what all the different things that he did to get to that point were. And I would imagine that it's that, you know, like just the making his songs available was only part of it. He had to get a break somehow, right? Like he still had to have people want to buy his music, know who he was, and that didn't happen because he was on the radio, right?
Right, that's a good point. And that's something that like a lot of people say, I'm sure that you've heard this too, that the label system, you know, the old way before the pre-Napster music world, the label made your record for you, but it also got you a lot of fans. And it promoted you, it got you on the radio, it was the thing that set you up with an audience.
Yeah, and they've got relationships with radio stations, they've got relationships with stores, they've got relationships with movie studios and television studios, and these are all ways that the record labels have a long history of being able to get people to hear your music without paying for it,
right,
as well.
So what Jonathan Coulton would say to that is, you don't need the label for that either. Again, all you need is the internet. And a lucky break. And here was his lucky break.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob.
The song that really hit big for me was the song Code Monkey, which is about a sad software designer, semi-autobiographical. For 9 years, I wrote software, and I quit that to do this.
Code Monkey, think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey, not say it out loud. Code Monkey, not crazy, just proud.
You know, I put it out there, and overnight it sort of exploded, and it was on Slashdot,
which is a big technology site.
That's right, yeah, and it's notorious for bringing people's servers down because it's so many people read that if somebody...
every tech geek in the world reads Slashdot, basically.
Exactly. And so here was this song about a sad tech geek, and it went directly, it was shot, an arrow shot directly to the heart of the tech geek community.
Code Monkey like Fritos, Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew, Code Monkey very simple man, big warm fuzzy secret heart, Code Monkey like you.
And that was the equivalent of, you know, me being discovered by some impresario and, you know, getting to go on the Ed Sullivan show when nobody knew who I was and people, you know, that was my breakthrough.
Do you think you would have been, if we, you know, 20 years ago, before the internet, before social media, would you have been able to, would you be making a living as a musician?
Well, 20 years ago, I moved to New York City to make a living as a musician, and instead I got a software job. So the answer is no. no, I'm serious. I moved to New York with dreams of becoming a rock star, you know, and I kind of played in a band and kind of nothing happened and did some open mic nights. I didn't know what to do. You know, in those days, you had to make a demo tape and bring your demo tape to an office, you know, and it was the same thing with touring. If you wanted to tour, what you had to do was play locally because you could drive there in your car or take the subway there and you could afford to... play a show for your six friends and the one other guy who was there by mistake. And if you did that enough times, then maybe the one other guy would like it and bring two of his friends next time. And you would gradually build this audience in ever-widening concentric circles. So you get a, now you can afford to rent a van for 6 days and, you know, drive to Boston and Philadelphia. And you're still not making any money. And you're building and building and building. It sounds terrible. It sounds terrible. The old ways seemed so hard and awful that I stayed out of the industry.
So what you're saying is you didn't have what it takes to make it as a 20th century musician, but you have what it takes to make it as a 21st century musician.
That's right. I was born a little bit too early, that's all.
All right. So he just said it right there. He couldn't make it in the old way, and then after the internet, he's now making a living as a musician. How can you refute that?
I want him to tell me how to replicate his success.
What do you mean? You don't think that...
I mean, I think that he's making money because he wrote a song that hit on Slashdot. Right? Mm-hmm. What is another song that I could write that would hit that way?
I mean, basically what you're saying is that for Jonathan Coulton, the internet basically provided like a perfect storm, right? He wrote a geek-friendly song that also happened to be like slightly pop-friendly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people on Slashdot are geeks and everybody likes decent pop music. So, you know, like when those two things converge, and then also Jonathan Coulton was, you know, able to have his songs widely available on the internet. And also he had, you know, he wrote code. So, you know, he could have a website and everybody could see it immediately. And also he, you know, has a history working in the industry and knows what he likes and knows what he wants to do and knows what he doesn't want to do. He was able to like put these things together really fast. I mean, the thing, listening to that tape, the thing that I started thinking about was Justin Bieber, who is 2010's big, honestly, 2010's big internet success story. Justin Bieber started out playing acoustic guitar covers of pop songs and soul songs and posting them on YouTube, and then the industry took over. And Justin Bieber at this point is one of the biggest stars in the music industry, in the recording industry, but also in the live touring industry. I mean, right? And Bieber played Madison Square Garden. They made a movie about his journey from a small town boy in Canada to playing in Madison Square Garden. And that's one thing that the industry can do that I think Jonathan Coulton still can't do by himself.
Is
jump from that basic step to the
Madison
Square Garden.
Right. But I don't really care about the Justin Biebers. I feel like there's always going to be Justin Biebers. I'm going to Google who he is in a minute. But no, I'm just joking. I'm joking. I know who Justin Bieber is. I got Bieber fever. But I feel like there was always those people.
You're thinking about like basically what we would call middle class musicians, right? Like
yeah.
The ones who aren't the huge stars but make a go of it and continue to be able to work on a daily basis and sustain a career.
And it seems like Jonathan Coulton wouldn't have had a career in musician. I mean, he said so himself. He wouldn't have had a career in music before. Like before the internet, that would have been basically impossible for him because he wasn't label material.
Yeah, he couldn't make that work for him. And in the past, let's just be, as long as we're laying all these cards on the table, you know, you didn't always have to have the labels work for you, right? There were other ways to do it. There was a big independent infrastructure. You know, there's a DIY movement. There are all these different ways that you can do it, but they do involve a lot of work, right? Like he was saying, he didn't want to book all these tours. He didn't want to ride around in vans. He didn't want to get two more people and then two more people and two more people
right.
to his shows. Right? Like,
yeah, it's much easier to post something on the internet and then hope you catch your break that way. It's like much easier. And what he would say, and I asked him about this, and I said, are you just sort of a fluke, a niche-y fluke, or do you think your model is replicable? And he was like, absolutely. I have a niche. I have a certain audience that likes me. They happen to be a geeky audience that tends to gather on this one part of the internet. But he's like, really what you need right now, what the modern world offers is like a place for you to put stuff up, and then if people happen to like it, it's really easy to share it with other people who like it, and it's really easy to pass it around.
That's what the internet is groups of people who like the same stuff showing each other stuff like that. It's amazing. And so, you know, for me, it's been remarkable to watch, because I write all these different things about, you know, I'm a very niche-y subject matter guy too, so, you know, I have a song about curling. And that, I'm sure, has been played in curling clubs all over the country, all over the world, because there are not a lot of songs about curling. And so if you're in this online forum and you're meeting all the other people in the country who like curling, which, by the way, when was there another opportunity to meet all the people in the country who like curling? Never. And so now you're all talking about stuff, and somebody says, hey, here's this song about curling, and you send it to all of your curling buddies all over the world. And that's you know, that has been the engine that has driven my expansion of fans over the years.
Here you come, it's Todd from the Office Town Hall.
All right, so right now, Jonathan Colton's business model is this beautiful, self-sufficient ecosystem. His fans give him money. In return, he provides them with music and ways to feel connected, like what you're hearing right now. This is the 2011 Winter Joco Cruise, the five-night Caribbean cruise that Jonathan organized with 350 of his fans. They paid a whole bunch of money to go on this cruise with him. He booked other musicians, and they went on this cruise. And the sound that you're hearing is from Tuesday night of the cruise, which was karaoke night. All his fans got up and sang their favorites of his songs. This is a guy singing the song we heard at the beginning, Regarding Your Brains. To me, I feel like this is the platonic ideal of what the new model could be. This is Jonathan Colton's job. He hangs around, fools around the guitar, writes a couple songs, posts on his Facebook page, maybe updates his blog, sends out some tweets to his Twitter followers, and that's his job. And then once a year, he goes on a cruise. So I ask you again, what's bad about that? Have I convinced you yet?
I still think it's good for him, and it's not that good for everybody else, I guess.
I think that someone like Jonathan Colton, you know, he's basically hit the lottery of the internet at this point. He has no involvement from a label, and he gets to do all these things, and he makes a huge amount of money. That's going to happen for very, very few people.
My question is it going to happen for fewer people than it used to happen for? Like, it was always hard to make it in the music industry. Very few bands ever got their lucky break. I'm not saying, is every musician going to make money in this glorious internet future, but is it better?
Well, yeah, but that's the thing, is like, he's one person. He's not doing anything other than like making a product and selling it. And he hit, like, he's kind of like a Snuggie, you know, he's a blanket with sleeves. We didn't know we wanted it. And then all of a sudden we did. Uh-huh. And we were willing to pay like a dollar and send it to all of our friends or something.
Right.
Maybe the internet is good for one musician by himself, but he's not a label. He doesn't have to sort of invest and inspire younger artists and like maintain his older artists. Mm-hmm. There's a way for him to support himself, but he's not a business.
And I think that's the key here. I mean, that we're going to keep coming back to this point. Jonathan Colton, whether or not he in the future is an example that people will be able to follow, and I'm sure that he is. I'm sure that in the future somebody will say, I wrote this song. I know that there are people out there who are going to like it. And that person will have seen the example that he laid out and be able to replicate it. But they have to be able to do all of those same things that he did. And for so many people, it's just so much easier to do that with the support of somebody else. You know, they need somebody else to help record them. That person needs to get paid. They need somebody else to build a website. That person needs to get paid. They need somebody else to write emails to places like Slashdot or to websites like BuzzFeed or, you write a song about pasta and you send it to Epicurious or I don't know, whatever. Like, you know, like if you're trying to serve that niche, then you still have to be willing to do all of the legwork that gets you to the point of being able to sell it. Mm-hmm. And that's where musicians have to make what essentially amounts to a tough decision.
Right. And that's a good place for us to close, because Jonathan Colton, when I talked to him, he had just been debating this very question. He'd come to this point where he was tired of folding his own T-shirts. There was way more email than he could actually answer. He'd actually hired an assistant to help him answer email. And he was wondering, like, is there a way that I could be doing this better? Should I go with a label? And he went back and forth. And he went to the label, and he talked to the label, and he talked to a couple of labels. And these were not major labels. These were independent labels. These were 21st century internet savvy labels. And they sort of talked to him, and they said, well, first you need to set up a Twitter account. He was like, I got one. They were like, how many followers do you have? And he was like, I have 60,000. They were like, oh, you're doing pretty good. And they started asking him for advice, basically. And so he stumbled onto a model that I think a label could follow. And the way he explained it, there are people now who are starting to do it. Some of the newer labels are starting to become much more internet savvy and basically helping other artists do the thing that he was, through luck and a strange fluke, able to do himself. So that might be the way we go.
I wouldn't look for the other one to disappear anytime soon. Sadly for our rhetorical argument, I don't think I would hold my breath.
Voice like honey, no one else could fill the shoe.
time and the weather, headlines and the local news.
As always, please send us your thoughts, questions, comments, and this is important, examples of how the internet is good or bad for you musicians, planetmoney@npr.org. You can also check out our friends at NPR Music, where?
NPRmusic.org.
NPRmusic.org. And, you know, to send us out, let's hear one more Jonathan Coulton song. Since we're in public radio, this is a song that Jonathan Coulton wrote about the local public radio news host here in New York City, Satirius Johnson. That is the name of the song, Satirius Johnson. It's called Dance, Satirius Johnson Dance. And it imagines Satirius Johnson with a secret double life as a club kid who goes out to all-night raves before rolling into his office early in the morning to do the news. I'm Alex Bloomberg.
I'm Jake Regans.
I'm Franny Kelly.
Thank you for listening.
The magic fades as the sun comes up. It's time he goes. He takes a quick shower, a shave, puts on office clothes. He hails a cab in the early gray dawn. Gets to work and turns his microphone on. And his dulcet tones wake up his city dance. Satirius Johnson dance.